Go Podcast 9.11. This happened yesterday for you, but it just happened for us. So, interim coach Brady Hoke at Tennessee, let's get it. Go! All right, so I casually mentioned to Ace that I thought I had a different opinion from him, and I was diligently writing down my very good podcast notes, and we're like about to start the podcast, and Ace is typing away, and I'm like, what are you doing? And he's like, making a screed against your opinion. That's what you did.
Basically, yeah.
And he just admits it, like there's nothing wrong with that.
I mean, come on, like you're preparing.
I'm not preparing a screed.
Do you want me to just sit here?
No,
like,
I don't.
Sit here and do nothing, like a lump? Like we gotta inform the people. I was just making sure I had my ducks in a row. I had the information correct.
We have to inform the people. That would have been a good podcast tagline as well.
Yes, that would have been good.
We would like to thank our sponsors. We are, of course, at the Ann Arbor Residence Inn downtown.
How many rooms left?
10. There are 10 conference rooms left. And God willing, there will be 9 next week. Our sponsors are Underground Printing, the Bow Store, the Residence Inn, Ann Arbor Downtown, Homeshire Lending, Peak Wealth Management, the Alumni Association of the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Lantana Hummus, Human Element, Ecotelligent Homes, and Michigan Law Grad. So I don't remember...
Like most of the second half?
Like most of this game. I know Michigan was up 28-0, and then I just zoned out, and I was watching a football game, but it just kind of fell off of me.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Glenn Mason was just kind of jabbering along.
Oh,
like,
my God, he's so bad.
He's pretty terrible at this. And Maryland gave up.
They didn't give up.
They gave up. They kicked a field goal with 19 seconds left in the third quarter, down 28-0. Okay. That is giving up.
Okay, but before that, the whole of that third quarter was like giving me the bad feels.
But they also attempted a field goal on 4th and 2 midway through the third quarter that they missed when they were moving the ball, again, down 28-0. That is just the James Franklin wave a giant white flag at Jim Harbaugh so he can be extremely disappointed in you. And just disappointed for the game of football.
Okay, so, but my point here is that it's going to not make me feel happy when the S&P Plus comes out. And that's like...
Okay,
predictive.
Fair, but I'm saying the S&P Plus is not necessarily going to reflect the reality of this game, which is that Michigan...
got gashed in the third quarter.
Okay, yeah, the defense gave up some drives. If we're going to be concerned about the defense, then...
Well...
I don't know what to say.
I mean, there are some concerns that you can have about the defense.
A couple minor things about getting edged, sure.
And the fact that like they got gashed a little bit up the middle with an offense that's not going to be that dissimilar from Ohio State's.
Yeah.
They had some struggles against Penn State, and Penn State hasn't been able to move the ball on the ground at all lately.
I have a hard time getting concerned about this run defense when most of the available information for us all this year is that they kick ass.
Okay,
we've
had a nothing season against nothing teams, though.
That's true. It just seems like people are. I mean, this was one of those games that was out of hand so early that you start going into like, let's find something to complain about mode, which it, you know,
people did that. But I also kind of think that their complaints are at least a little valid.
A couple of them, maybe.
But you're still like, get out of here, Twitter mentions.
I just didn't
tweet much during the game. Because
you didn't
like,
tweet at all during the game. You did not tweet once.
I did. I tweeted about the stupid pass interference calls right at the beginning.
Okay. Yeah.
And then I was just like, I was trying, it was almost falling asleep the whole game. It was weird.
It was, yeah, no, it was kind of a tough game to like, I went and made myself an extra mug of tea because it was like, I need caffeine to get through this. I need help.
Yeah. Thanks, Jim Delaney.
Yeah.
It's good to play this program every year for the rest of time. Or at least until the Ann Arbor Residence Inn downtown program gets applied.
We're working on it.
We're working on it.
I just, you know, You're looking at, like, it's, so Maryland attempts their first sad field goal and misses it.
They did miss it, yes.
Michigan, their next drive, they have a 16-yard run and then go run, run, pass out, which, fine.
Okay.
The next drive is in the incomplete bomb to Donovan Peoples-Jones.
Which I wish was completed.
Yeah, it would have been nice. Yeah. But, and then screen, attempted pass, out.
Okay.
And then they have the Chris Evans touchdown drive after that.
All right,
we're talking about a pretty short period of time in which Michigan's offense did not look great. And yeah. In the first half, Peters was clipping along at over 10 yards an attempt.
Sort of.
I would say, if anything, that might be kind of underselling it, considering that there were two obvious pass interference calls
true.
That were missed.
But, I mean, they did a lot of work with screens, and it's a very good RPS game.
Yeah, and they did, you know, the pass to Gentry was quite open. At the same time, does John O'Korn necessarily make that pass? I don't know. I really don't.
He probably makes that one,
but am I totally comfortable as John O'Korn winds up to throw that ball? No. Was I totally comfortable as Brandon Peters did? Yes. I think that counts for something.
I don't know, man. I mean, it's bad when you're sitting through a third quarter against Maryland and they have like 160 yards and you have 12.
Yeah, I mean,
it's not a good feeling.
It feels
bad.
But I think the just general, like, ugh, this is not fun to watch kind of overwhelmed the, like, how much should we put this in context?
I agree with that. I feel like I'm halfway to them, though.
Yeah. I don't know. It sounds a little devil's advocate-y.
No. I'm not. These are my genuine opinions.
Okay.
I've never devil's advocated anything.
That's fair.
I just tell people what I think, and they think I'm being a jerk.
There's a fair amount of evidence to this.
So
I can't argue there.
It's just who I am, and kind of a jerko. What? Don't suffer fools gladly. Anyway, let's talk about the offense kind of in general. Michigan's ground game is effective, but not the kind of crazy blowout it's been in previous games. The two main backs combined for 130 yards on 25 carries. A good, solid day, especially because they both chip in long pass receptions.
And also, none of their longest run of the day was 17 yards for either of them. So it was a lot of consistent, decent gains and not a lot of – we didn't have the huge chunk plays that happened against Minnesota that might, you know – I mean, that was a great rushing performance, don't get me wrong, but that might skew the numbers a bit.
Well, it wasn't a crushing performance like Rutgers, where they only have like a long of 20 or whatever, and they're still averaging like 6-7 yards a carry.
Yes, that's true.
And Rutgers just held Saquon Barkley to 35 yards on 14 carries.
I don't know what's going on. So there, like, let's just move past that.
Like, maybe the Rutgers run defense is okay.
They're for real-ish, maybe?
I don't. And we just paved those guys. So, I mean, football is weird. We saw that this weekend. I mean, Ohio State's coming off a 55-24 loss to Iowa, and they just pave Michigan State. Meanwhile, Iowa has, like, 60 yards of offense against Wisconsin.
Yeah, and then also, like, Rutgers is just hanging around for a long time against Penn State.
Yeah, that was,
that didn't hold.
No.
But they did hang around for much longer than anybody thought they would.
So football is strange, and this game was especially strange because Michigan roars out to a 28-point lead and with a couple of short fields.
And this is also just it's a low-volume game in general. Michigan attempts 18 passes and runs the ball 38 times. That's just not a lot of plays.
Yeah.
Especially when a big chunk of the second half is let's just go home time.
Yeah, I mean, it's good for me when I do the UFRs.
Yeah, your UFRs are going to be like 3,000 words this week.
I remember that Indiana game where like Denard is ripping off like touchdowns every time he touches the ball, and then Indiana goes on like 15 play marches. There were, I think, like 107 Indiana plays in that game.
Yeah, I mean, you UFR'd the Michigan-Illinois game.
Yeah, but that doesn't stand out as like the worst like experience UFRing a game. It was that Indiana game,
man,
because it was just
you've UFR'd some games, man.
Then I've not UFR'd some other ones.
No,
but anyway, I think a couple of takeaways from the run game is that Higdon and Evans are legitimately good backs.
Yes,
like Evans had a couple of like little darning inside zone runs where Kreese doesn't appear to be there. He makes a subtle shift, and he gets through a crack.
Yeah. He had one of those where he kind of, like, downshifts in the hole.
Yeah.
you know, kind of Le'Veon Bell style, where you're almost like stopped waiting for the defense to commit.
Yeah.
That was nice to see.
Yeah, because he threatens a gap, and then he does that kind of stop move, lets a block clear, and then he's got a gap. And then there was kind of the offset draw, which I think they call Sparrow. It's a Sparrow in my head now, mm-hmm. where the left tackle just kind of hurls a rusher upfield and then goes and gets a second block. Cole did an excellent job on that, but there was still a safety there. And then Evans pulled out like the Madden back juke.
Yep.
And that guy flies by. He gets a first down. That's right before the touchdown to finish Michigan scoring. And then Higdon has that little dump-off catch where he breaks a couple tackles and manages to turn that into 35 yards. He also had another long run where there were two tacklers that he managed to avoid and pop to the outside.
Evans' touchdown run, the last one, he runs right through two tackles.
Yeah, so, I mean, these guys are looking very impressive. Michigan did more zone running this week, which was interesting mm-hmm. to see. Possibly a reason that the numbers came down a little bit just because they're trying to work on diversifying their ground game. But it's been 4 or 5 weeks now, and Higdon and Evans both look like the guys we were hoping they were going to be preseason.
Yeah, and, you know, it's been – sorry.
It's been 1 week.
Yeah.
Bare Naked Ladies song.
Well, now I'm totally derailed.
Remember when Seth put that on podcast and people just complained to us?
Mm-hmm.
I remember that.
Yeah.
Because I knew as soon as it happened, people were going to be like, I thought you guys were cool. And I'm like, one, the most recent podcast had like a long Dungeons & Dragons versus Magic the Gathering conversation. And two, also that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there are different definitions of cool, but I'm not sure we fit any of them.
No. I mean, you have a cool hat, sort of.
You know, I guess for a certain hipster cool, I might qualify.
Well,
I
mean, hipsters are supposed to be cool. That's what the whole point of being a hipster.
True, but hipster blogger cool? I don't know, man.
Hipster blogger is like, oh,
I need to be in Brooklyn.
Flatbush.
Yeah, I need to be in Brooklyn for that to work.
I live in Flatbush, and my name is like Choir. What's his name? Corsiki Bo. And I'm just talking like
you've lost me.
All right, anyway, Gentry got an open touchdown.
Yep.
And that was a very awesome RPS play where Michigan motioned a bunch of guys around and then had McKeon motion out as a wide receiver. A safety follows him, and that means that there is absolutely nobody covering Zach Gentry as he runs a seam route down the middle of the field.
Yeah, there was certainly no one over the top.
No, there was a safety on the other side, but there was like a massive bust by the Maryland defense. One I think Michigan actually induced.
Yes.
So that's nice to see. I thought they had a couple of other really nice RPS plays, mostly on screens.
Mm-hmm.
And we haven't really seen the screen game do much of anything for Michigan. God, in a long time.
Yeah, it's a very long time.
I mean, like there were a couple of like cool screens, I think in Harbaugh's first year, but it's been a minute.
Yeah, like the first like big screenplay that comes to mind, other than a couple of Harbaugh trickeries, is like Vincent Smith.
Yes. Vincent Smith throwback screens. It's been a minute. And the offensive line, I think, I have to see what I think in depth, but I caught Bushel Beatty mauling a couple guys with help from Cesar Ruiz, who got a second start.
Yeah, those guys continue to get a lot of push.
And I mentioned the great block on the Sparrow play by Cole, but that's kind of like par for the course. I don't know why Michigan's ground game was only good and not great in this one. And I mean, part of that is the opposition. Maryland is a better run defense than Minnesota by some distance. But that's something that we'll have to talk about later in the week. Donovan Peoples-Jones was kind of openly frustrated when he got missed.
Yeah.
And I get that because he seems like he's running open whenever he takes these deep routes. And some of them don't even get thrown. And the ones that get thrown, he's really not had much of an opportunity except on one or two.
No. And to see another overthrow of him, too, is like,
right.
Just give him a chance, man. Just give him a chance.
Yeah, because
that dude can go up and get it, too.
Right. He can high point the ball, and maybe he gets run over, and maybe they actually call it. Oh, my God, those pass interference calls.
We'll get to it.
So,
we'll
I mean, we're going to get to it right now. Like, what was that on the first drive? Like, that's like, it looks like a bad throw from Peters, and then you see the replay, and it's like, no, Peoples-Jones was just not allowed to jump by a guy grabbing onto him.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a flagrant, blatant pass interference that they just decide, nah, we're not going to call it. And the very next play is a third down where you get the wraparound tackle beforehand, and that also looked like a bad throw from Peters. And it's like, nope, that's just...
Yeah, he put it where he thought the receiver would be if the receiver was allowed to, you know, run freely.
Just a dude, like, slingshotting past your receiver by using his body, which is totally illegal. And they don't call it. And both of those were not, like... Like, Michigan had a couple of plays where, like, you know, Metellus got a breakup, and he's got a fistful of jersey and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And you see those go uncalled very frequently because the fistful of jersey is shielded from the referee.
Yeah.
So when those plays happen to Michigan, I'm like, okay, that's probably interference, but I can't really get on that because Michigan...
Like, we do that, too. We
clearly coaching their defensive yeah, backs to do that.
We're doing Robbins racing quite a bit.
Yeah, and so that's fine. But these two calls were just like, how do you not make that call? And especially the second one, because it's like you just clearly blew a call, and you have to know you blew a call.
Yeah, those are ones where you kind of expect, like, a flag to, like, even if the ref who's there doesn't call it, you expect a flag to come in from, like, 30 yards away from one of the other guys being like, dude, like, it was right in front of you.
Yeah.
I saw that. But not so much.
No.
In this game. And, you know, it would have been nice to get that jump start on the first drive. I mean, they did score on the second one, so that's
yeah,
nice.
I mean, they probably score on the first drive if they get the free, like, 30 yards in penalties. They should have gotten
one
with
two
plays, yeah.
I did enjoy that on the second drive that Harbaugh goes for the touchdown of sentiment on the very first scoring drive of the game. It worked. You know, like
second goal from the two. Like
you do expect the fullback to probably get it in there, especially behind JBB and Ruiz with the way they're moving.
And Mason. Mason had a great
plug. They did line up three fullbacks on that play. And just
it
go
was
from
very
beat.
Harbaugh, yeah.
But that was also very much for Henry Poggi playing in Maryland. He's from Baltimore.
This is why they needed to get Vic Viramontes, because they could put him under center, and then they would have four fullbacks.
Oh, my goodness. Can we not bring up these things that just...
He already transferred from Cal, so...
Yeah.
It was probably a bad decision to go to Cal, because he could be a fullback. Anyway, I need, like, a fullback trick pass.
Yeah, we gotta get one of those before Harbaugh's gone.
Like a double reverse flea flicker fullback throw.
Preferably to another fullback.
Yes. But that'll never happen now, so we are depressed. Kareem Walker had one very angry Kareem Walker run.
Yes, he did.
Which I thought was a good, like, someone grabbed him by the shoulder and he went, get off me! And the guy got off him. So he's flashing a lot of talent. You can see why he was such a hyped back in high school, even if that hype kind of got rescinded towards the end of his career. But
and those dreads, man. They're magnificent.
Yeah, and Higdon kind of limped off, so we didn't get much of him in the second. We didn't get
and they like immediately ruled him out too. So that
I mean, they're up like 28-0 at the point. So it's like, why even take a chance?
Yeah, but after the game, Harbaugh, I mean, he was tight-lipped about the status of the players who exited the game.
Yeah.
But you know, usually if a guy's like looking all right, you might mention like, hey, he'll be fine. And that wasn't the case because they suffered a number of dings in this game.
They did, and the Higdon injury looked like. An ankle sprain.
Yes.
And that could be 1 week, he could be playing against Wisconsin, or it could be out until the bowl game.
Yeah.
So that would suck because he's really come on. Obviously, he's also...
And Michigan's also missing, you know, Ty Isaac's been dinged up. Yeah. So, you know, suddenly the significant depth in the backfield has been whittled down quite a bit.
And like, Walker coming on does give them a guy to spot Evans if they are down two of their top three backs.
Yes.
But... obviously not an ideal situation, especially because Evans doesn't really strike anyone as like the bell cow who carries the ball 30 times in a game.
No, not really.
And Michigan needs to run the ball that much.
They're going to have to do that against Wisconsin and Ohio State.
Yeah. So unfortunate, but Walker's coming on. Tight end blocking I thought was again very good. It's something that, again, I have to take a more in-depth look at the tape to really see. But you know, pretty much par for the course. I thought Peters was generally effective, but had a couple of moments where I was like,
Yeah.
He did have, like, there was a waggle that he had an incompletion on, and it looked like he was throwing the ball well behind his guy. But that was actually a really good throw.
Yeah, he was throwing it away from the defender on that one.
Right. So I think that some of the stuff we saw that had a negative outcome, it actually was not negative because of the pass interference and because of a couple of coverage incidents, but still kind of felt a little wobbly, and I'm not exactly sure who that's on. But we're going to see what happens against Wisconsin, because Wisconsin is a weird team.
They sure are.
They are a weird team. All right, we're going to take a break, come back, talk about defense and special teams.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
It's painless, it's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com. If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
I grew up in a small town of Hazlitt, Michigan, and I witnessed a lot of great people making a lot of poor financial decisions. And I thought to myself, I don't want to be in that position. I don't want to have my retirement at risk. Over the last 17 years, my team has developed and refined our process, which helps people understand what's important to them and what they value most. And because people don't have pensions anymore, we're adding in multiple income streams during retirement. At Peak Wealth Management, our goal is to build long-lasting relationships, and we do that by building trust, by showing our integrity, and letting them know how much we care. And that's one of the most important things we do here at Peak, is understand your goals and help you get there.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco, to St. Louis, to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
Leonardo leads, Donatello dust machine.
That's a fact, Jack.
Raphael is cool, but rude.
Give me a break.
Michelangelo is a party dude.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Heroes in a half shell. Turtle power.
So the defense did what the defense did in the first half. A couple of things here and there, but really Maryland could find absolutely no purchase. You had a couple of good pass breakups on deep shots by Metellus and Long. You had guys bursting into the backfield. Maryland got like a couple of edge things, but they were like 6-yard edge things, not 16-yard edge things.
Yes.
And then Michigan kind of shut it down. Like there were a couple of edge pitches where Michigan had clearly seen that enough where it's like, this is not going to happen again. Brand was actually like, if that guy was 6'2", I think he might be like a player.
Yeah, I was like shocked that he was completing the passes that he was, because every once in a while they'd show like the end zone camera view from behind the line and was just like, how is this dude seeing anything?
And like, he walks out there and the announcers are like, oh, he's listed at 5'11", but the offensive coordinator said he's like 5'7 or 5'8". And I was wondering if that was like literally the shortest quarterback Michigan has ever played. Because like, even an Air Force quarterback, I mean, he is an Air Force quarterback.
Yeah. And even the Air Force quarterback was like 5'10".
Right. And Air Force is like, son, you're not big enough to play quarterback at the school.
Man, yeah, I mean...
But he was...
I think you'd have to dig deep back into the annals of Michigan history to find a shorter quarterback that they faced.
But he was game. He made a couple of nice throws, and I mean, there was a zone breakdown over the middle, and he just kind of roped it in there for 20 yards, and I was like, oh.
Yeah.
Like, you would start at Illinois.
Well,
and probably
that's
Rutgers.
Setting the bar low, but...
I know, but like...
He's starting at Maryland.
Well, because there are some extenuating circumstances.
You know,
there.
But it kind of looks like maybe he should have been playing over the Bortenschlager.
Oh, I don't know if you can say that. Maybe. I don't know. Well, you may or may not be able to say that. He does throw a couple of terrible interceptions.
Yeah. One's kind of understandable when Rashawn Gary's running up the middle on a stunt, just completely unencumbered.
Well, three different guys. Like buried him as soon as he got rid of that ball.
Yeah, Josh Uche like bull rushed Isaiah Prince right into Brand, and I did
is
not.
Is Prince like the terrible one or not? Wasn't one of the tackles.
He's
like...
the one who should be a guard.
Okay, but you shouldn't be able to bull rush that guy.
Yeah, I mean he's a guy who might be an NFL guard, and he weighs like 325 pounds. I did not expect Josh Uche to just move him like that.
And he had another play on a screen where he. Tackle the quarterback such that he couldn't even attempt to get the screen off.
Which was almost too bad.
Right, because McCray is like just sitting in front of the running back being like, please, 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 please.
Throw
please.
This.
And
I'm not here.
And Uche makes the quarterback turf it, and he's just freaking out because he's like, oh, that was a pick six waiting to happen.
There were a couple plays like that in this game.
They did. Michigan did a very good job of containing the Maryland screen game.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a development that's important because we've seen them struggle with that kind of stuff in this game last year under Don Brown. So like they've clearly worked on it. They've clearly got a bunch of calls. They're clearly making those calls at opportune times. And Northwestern got a couple of things, Maryland got a couple of things, but not much. And then in the second half, I'll have to see like how much rotation they were doing on the defensive line, but they did kind of get got by just some straight runs up the middle, and that's a little bit alarming.
Yeah. It was interesting to see because, you know, Brian Monet's kind of been worked out of the rotation recently, and then in this game he started and was getting most of the four down lineman snaps for at least the first half, and then in the second half there was more Aubrey Solomon, so it'll be interesting to see going back over the film whether there was something there, but we did get Lawrence Marshall ends up in the box score. They were rotating. Carlo Kemp got a lot of time, especially once Gary exits.
Yeah, Gary has some sort of shoulder stinger thing, or he's been having issues in one particular arm pretty frequently this season.
It appears to be the left one based on last night.
Yeah, so he's got some kind of slight separation or nerve thing going on.
Yeah, there. Yeah, because that was right after he crushed the quarterback, so it wasn't someone hit the heck out of Gary. That does point to a recurring thing. But yeah, it was a little disappointing to see how they held up against the run, but I also expect some of the D-line rotation might explain that.
Yeah, other than that, it's just like I am struggling to find stuff to talk about the defense. Like, they tried to hit him on a couple of corner outs, and they got a pass interference out of it, but also Mattel said that pass breakup I mentioned.
Yes.
David Long did a really good job to fall off his guy on that interception that he returned 80 yards because that, I think it was man-to-man.
Yeah.
And he sees the ball go up and he's able to go back and get it when that's supposedly supposed to be a corner out. So
yeah.
It obviously wasn't getting there, but I think a lot of cornerbacks just stick to their guy and don't have the awareness to go make that interception.
Yeah, that ball just ends up in no man's land a lot of the time. Mild concern for next week is LaVert Hill exits this game with a concussion.
So
let's hope. I mean, I know Wisconsin's a little dinged up among the receivers, but Hill's been Michigan's best corner.
One of the best corners in the country.
Yeah, it'd be nice to have him out there.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, a concussion is often something you can come back from in a week.
Yeah, and he doesn't have a history, at least, that we know
no,
of.
No, and you'll, I mean, hold him out of practice a little bit. That probably won't hurt him very much. I mean, he's...
He knows what he should be doing by this point.
Like, it's not like being LeVert Hill is not super complicated at this point. It's like, you jam that guy's ass off and play good coverage. Yeah. So, Chase Winovich, after complaining that he was getting shorted in the box score, gets an unjustified tackle for loss.
He sure does. He stole one from Hudson.
He stole one because Hudson gets in one of those blitzes where he's just shooting at the mesh guy. And then he basically tackles the guy for loss. Then Winovich comes in to help finish the play. And Hudson doesn't even get a half TFL. I'm like, come on, man. Come on. He's one away from Peppers.
I mean, the lesson's clear. You got to get in the ear of these stat guys early.
Winovich is successfully lobbied the box score.
He's
for stats.
I mean, the guy's got NFL aspirations. You gotta pat him where you can get him.
I don't think they're aspirations at this point.
No, they're not. They're not. He'll be there.
One last note: Mohurst has 9 tackles.
Yeah, a lot of those were like him chasing down stuff from behind too, where he, like, some Maryland players looked like they might have been able to break for, like, at least like 6, 7, 8 yards, and he just, like, hauls a guy down after 3.
Yep.
He's still good.
But I mean, 31 rushes for 186 yards for Maryland is
not ideal.
I mean, especially because you have a very similar offense in Ohio State coming up. I don't know exactly what happened there, but a little bit concerned. Moving on to special teams. Speaking of concerns, Quinn Nordine misses a field goal and comes over to the sideline, and Harbaugh's like, hey, why don't you start making those, jabroni? And then there's kind of like
a bit of a shouting match.
A tiff. A kerfuffle? Not a kerfuffle. Kerfuffle means there's like some slap fighting.
Yeah, there's some physical.
A tiff.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Harbaugh's over the wild thing persona.
Well, I think you are.
I am, yeah.
You must be happy, though.
I mean, no, he's missing these from inside 50. I don't care about whether he makes... I mean, I do care about whether he makes those. I want him to make those.
Sure.
It's the longer ones where, you know, he can make one, but just one.
You don't even want to make him the first one.
No, because then I spend the rest of the game very nervous.
Right, yeah. Michigan blocks a punt as Josh Metellus successfully sells a guy on the fact that he's going to try to go to the left and goes to the right, gets it right around him, and then takes the ball right off the punter's foot.
Someone called it a Eurostep block punt, which was
that's really good,
incredibly accurate. That's... shout out to somebody in my mentions on Twitter last night. I'm sorry for not remembering who you were specifically, but that's exactly what that was.
You can search Twitter right now and find that out. And then Maryland also attempts a fake punt that Michigan defenses very, very well. Brad Hawkins, I think, was the first guy in there, and Devin Bush was also in the area. So a lot of stuff to talk about in special teams this week. Go ahead.
Tom Lawrence
with the Eurostep block punt. That is an excellent way to put it. Maybe he should have a podcast. Obviously, we're not doing very well.
No.
And then the return game, you know, Michigan, I don't know if they were doing this on purpose, but they were doing like the Fug Pooch.
Yeah.
And I didn't want them to be doing that because I didn't want Ty Johnson to have opportunities to return the kicks. And he was maybe a guy away from really breaking a big one.
Yeah, there were a couple that he was pretty darn close to breaking out there. There was I think Glasgow came up with a shoestring tackle one that was like, if he doesn't get that, he's running a long way. So, yeah, I mean, they may want to get more selective with the foguing.
Right, because, like, I get it against a lot of players, but not Ty Johnson.
And they do bury him at the 15 on one of them. You know,
It works, but
there is a risk involved.
Right, and that risk is not probably worth it, given the...
Yeah, like 10 yards against Maryland, what does that mean when you got Michigan's defense?
Yeah, exactly.
As opposed to, like, Ty Johnson running the whole way.
Yeah.
But...
So maybe they could be more selective with that. Or maybe it wasn't on purpose. I don't know. Kind of felt like it was on purpose, though.
I think folks established that those things are pretty on purpose by this point.
So I think that's it. That's all I got about special teams. There was no game theory, really.
I mean, kicking DJ Durkin, stop with the sad field goals.
I mean,
I'm okay with it. I get to call him James Franklin and laugh, but they were sad.
Still bitter about that Ohio State game 2 years ago, I bet.
Look, man. 20-yard field goal.
Yeah.
Down 28-0. That's sad. Regardless of, you know, decisions to play single high coverage all game against Ohio State a couple years ago. Jerk.
All right. With that, we'll take a break. We're going to come back and talk about not football. Something else. That's good. Mostly.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
If you find yourself on the wrong side of the law in Ann Arbor or around Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man in the huddle. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom-printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
If you've got a cold room or you're feeling drafts in your house, you probably want to take care of that before winter. Here's what you've got to do. Call Ecotelligent Homes for a comprehensive home energy audit. They will find the source of your issue. Their licensed teams will install the fixes. They will help you qualify for the right local rebates, and they even offer 0% financing. Ecotelligent Homes is an award-winning DTE Energy and Consumers Energy trade ally. Call 248-291-7815 or visit their website at ecotelligenthomes.com.
So this is Aces Hockey Podcast and Brian's Basketball Podcast because there were, again, games this weekend on at the same time. I have not seen...
And this is mostly Aces' end of the first half and the entire second half basketball podcast.
What?
I had to write the recap, man.
Oh, I suppose that's what I pay you to do.
Like, I was watching a football game that I was then writing up. I only have so many eyeballs and brains.
That's... very true.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you.
You have a disappointing number of eyeballs and brains. Oh, employee. Anyway, so I want to talk about hockey first because this was – I know that the college hockey realignment has made a lot of people pissed off, but if I get four Michigan-Minnesota hockey games a year, it's all worth it.
Yeah.
I love these games. I love the up-tempo nature. They're all really well played, and it's everybody going balls to wall for 60 minutes. These games had an incredible story. Michigan falls down 3-0 and 4-0 on Friday and Saturday, respectively. They're down 6-3 in the third period of the Saturday game. And they come back to win on Friday in overtime. They come back to tie on Saturday, and they had this goalmouth scramble that Dakota Rabe could have had the overtime winner in. And if you look at the Corsi and you look at the where the shots are coming from in the attacking zone, this looks like Michigan playing a top five team, at least in talent level, dead even. And the way the games went makes it look like a heroic comeback effort. And it was that, but it was also, it also felt like two very good hockey teams just playing each other. And then the order of the goals gave the game a certain flavor, but this was in no way a fluke that Michigan comes out of this weekend with 4 points. And man, that's really something, because I thought, you know, Michigan had a real tough time generating anything on the cycle until the third period of the Friday game. And then again, they dominate overtime. They dominate the last 10 minutes of the third period on Saturday. And that's how they come back in both these games. And this is a huge step towards Michigan making the tournament in Mel's first year.
That's pretty big.
Yeah, I mean, because you get like bonus points in the RPI for quality wins. So if you were going to trade a win against Minnesota, you would trade a win against Minnesota for a loss against Ferris State if you can only win one of those games, because the RPI comes out the same, except you get that quality win bonus. So Michigan getting a win and a half win out of this is huge for them. And, you know, more so than that, like they really felt like they were in the game the whole way, even if they were down by a lot. I mean, there was, you know, a minute there where they're down 4-0 and you're like, should I go home? And then they score a goal and you're like, all right, we'll see where this goes. And it went to 6-6, which is it's kind of something.
That's a face melter of a hockey game.
Right, it was. It was. I have a couple of takes on individual players now. Quinn Hughes is exactly as fun as a 5'9 defenseman who's supposed to be a top 10 NHL draft pick has to be. He tries to do way too much right now.
Okay.
Like, because he thinks he can do everything in the world, and he's like 90% right about that. But he's kind of having a little bit of a transition period where, you know,
the stuff that worked in juniors maybe doesn't work so well now.
Right. So he's playing Minnesota, and Minnesota's six defensemen have all been drafted.
Yeah.
So the quality of competition is taking it up a notch. And so he's putting himself in positions where, occasionally he gets caught up in the boards and there's two guys around him and he just has to throw it somewhere. And since he's a defenseman, you know, the ensuing rush the other way is pretty dangerous.
Yes.
On the other hand, Michigan is clearly planning for this. So they have Hughes, they have Nicholas Boka, who's able to jump up in the rush. And Michigan has clearly drilled their forwards, like, you need to be aware that when one of those defenseman goes down in the zone that you need to rotate back, and they've been pretty good about that. So they feel like they have a much more dynamic offense because they are willing to rotate those defensemen down into the zone, which is something that I remember Minnesota used to be really good doing when they had Jordan Leopold, who was the Hobie winner as a defenseman.
Yeah.
So Hughes is that kind of talent level, and he's a riot. Like, just every time he touches the puck, it's just like, well, I'm going to saucer this over. Like, there's no defender between the two guys he saw. He's just like, this is just how I do it. I just saucer the puck to you. That's what I do. I do the hardest thing in hockey casually. So he's a riot. Griffin Luce is a really physical, pounding defender who has problems when he's got the puck. So he's had two or three bad turnovers in a lot of these games. Had a little bit of a rough night, and I think that he's a guy who's kind of rounding into a Jay Vancik type, but it's a little bit nervous when the puck's on his stick. Cooper Marody, I think I underrated. Marody.
Don't get that right.
He's a junior, and he's really maturing into a legitimate top-line player. And that's huge for Michigan because he missed half of the last season with an academic thing. And came back and was just kind of like, eh. And you're like, how committed is this guy? Like, how good is this guy? And it turns out that he is committed and very good. So that's nice.
So is this ahead of expectations for where you thought they'd be?
I mean, we'll see. Like, that Ferris game, I mean, they outshot him 2-1, and they managed to lose that game. So I didn't expect them to go toe-to-toe with Minnesota. I expected them to, you know, I was hoping that they could maybe get a split by getting some really good goaltending, which they didn't. I don't think they got bad goaltending, but obviously when you give up
six
and 10 goals in a weekend, it's not like, well, that guy stood on his head.
Yeah.
So we'll see. I think they can play with anyone now.
And that's something.
That is something. So what did you see in the basketballing?
Well, I apparently missed the part that really stunk because North Carolina or North Florida, not North Carolina, that would be a very different thing. North Florida comes out in this game playing a funky extended 3-2 zone. And, you know, this is early enough in the season for Michigan where they're probably not doing a whole lot of opponent preparation because they're still installing stuff. So I managed to catch the end of the first half, and Michigan was still kind of working through stuff in the beginning of the second half, too, where they just had trouble figuring out how to generate quality shots that weren't just whipping the ball around the perimeter and then shooting over the zone.
The Syracuse approach.
Yes. And they were relatively successful with the shooting over at times because, you know, Duncan Robinson's pretty good at that. And Michigan ends up 9-for-25 on threes in this game. So they were shooting the ball rather well. But it was what really turned the game around and allowed Michigan to come a very late three-pointer away from a KenPom cover, which was obnoxious, they started – first of all, Charles Matthews, who finishes with 20 points in this game, started hitting the little mid-range shots that you kind of need to hit against the zone defense, and he was able to just elevate and hit a little, like, 10- to 12-foot jumper a few different times in the second half, and those were shots that – he was taking in the first half. I think he should have been taking in the first half, and they just weren't going in. So it was nice to see those start going in. And then, encouragingly, the other thing that they were really doing was pounding the ball inside to Mo Wagner, and he was finishing in the post.
They were still in the zone.
Yes.
Okay.
So Wagner goes 8-for-14 on twos. He has 4 offensive rebounds to go with 8 defensive rebounds. North Florida was not a large team, so this is still a, like, we'll see how this goes, but early returns on Wagner's rebounding were good in that he was not only grabbing the balls that were bouncing right to him, he had a couple of out-of-area defensive rebounds where he jumped by a guy who had position on him, and that's something he was not really doing last year. You did not see Wagner get rebounds if the ball was not bouncing to him.
Mm-hmm.
So that was something... So Wagner, Robinson, and Matthews are clearly the three top dogs on offense right now, and that's the part of the lineup that, along with Muhammad Ali Abdur-Rahman, who had a pretty quiet game, that Beilein is very comfortable with right now. But there was a lot of rotation at point guard trying to figure out who to put out there, and in this game, Xavier Simpson was by far the most effective one. He has 9 assists, only 2 turnovers, swishes an open 3 in the second half. He only takes 2 shots. They're both from three-point range. Makes one of them. Grabs 3 defensive rebounds, which, you know, he's trying to be Derek
master,
Walton.
Yeah.
You know, we'll see how much that carries through against teams that aren't North Florida. But he's his usual pesty self on defense. Jaron Simmons kind of disappointingly was pretty quiet in this game. Didn't make a shot from the field. Only points came at the free throw line and only had 1 assist in 10 minutes. So it seems like he's still very much figuring out what's going on around him. And that was somewhat the same case with Eli Brooks. Again, no assists. Only goes 1-for-4 from the field. Does get 14 minutes out there. He actually played more minutes than Simmons, but I'd expect Simmons to stay in front of him when things start getting pretty serious. There wasn't a whole lot from the backup bigs, which I know you're curious about.
Yeah.
Teske only gets 7 minutes in this one. Austin Davis gets a couple minutes at the end. They're both large. That's about all we get out of this game.
Did Livers do anything?
Livers was out there for 10 minutes, hit a smooth corner three-pointer, had 2 assists and should have had a third one on a nice entry feed to Mo Wagner that Wagner gets on the second opportunity. So robs Livers of an assist, but
yeah,
he made the play. I like his – I mean, he's got good size. I like his skill set on offense. He's a gifted passer, and he's got a good-looking shot. he still has to figure out some things on defense, but he was being very he was the most obviously vocal of the freshmen and the most obvious in terms of when he was out there on defense, pointing, communicating with the other guys, figuring out where he was supposed to be. So you can tell that he knows what he's supposed to be doing, what he's supposed to be doing to get on the court. There's still going to be some times where he might miss an assignment for two because you're talking about a true freshman, but he looks like he could carve out a role. He's going to need to. I don't think he's going to carve into Duncan Robinson's minutes because Robinson drops 21 points in this game and also grabs 7 rebounds. So he's starting to show, like, you know, if he's going to be shoehorned into playing the four, he can at least hold up there a little bit. He's never going to be a plus on defense, but his offense is setting up to make up for that, especially with he had a couple threes in transition in this game. Michigan was really good at finding him, and those are practically automatic. I mean, we talked about it last week, yeah. But those are really effective shots for him, and that's going to – I mean, he leads the team in minutes in this game, and that was with some people thinking that Livers might carve into his minutes a little bit, but I'm thinking – he's going to be a 30 to 35 minute a game guy right now.
All right. So concerns about giving up 63 points to North Florida at all?
Not really. I mean, they go 9-for-15 from beyond the arc.
Oh,
so
okay.
you want the closeouts to be a little bit better, but Michigan was actually pretty darn good at defending the two pointers. They held North Florida well below 50%. Blocked a couple shots. Wagner affected some others. I mean, he's not a rim protector, but he is starting to show that he at least knows that he should be trying to alter more shots down there. So Michigan was, I mean, Duncan Robinson comes away with a block shot in this game. They were giving North Florida some problems with just a sheer size advantage. But they did a much better job than they did in the exhibition of clearing the defensive glass. And looked pretty stout, other than North Florida being hotter than you'd expect from the outside.
All right. They have a game Monday?
Yeah, they do. Central Michigan on Monday.
Central Michigan. Going to centralize some Michiganders. Let's talk to Jamie.
We have a lot in common. You rode the bus to Bursley, so did Larry Page, and so did I. And we all love MGO Blah. I'm Nick Hopwood, your MGO financial coach. My entire family went to Michigan State, but I was the smart one finding my way to Ann Arbor to study econ. I've been a financial planner for 17 years, earning the designation Certified Financial Planner, and founded Peak Wealth Management in Plymouth. Oh, you're pretty smart, and you probably have a sweet retirement spreadsheet already. My job is to make sure. As a financial coach, I make sure you're on track, or if you're not on track, I tell you exactly what you're going to need to do. And if you listen, I'll be able to tell you how your future should look, just like the knowledge. And I have cool charts and graphs to tell the story, sort of like the Mathlete. To learn more or schedule time to chat, check out peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Hi, this is Seth from MGoBlog. So we bought our home through a local bank. Family friend was the banker, but the underwriter was just it was a nightmare. So we went to refinance. I talked to Matt. It was so different. He shops the loan to different underwriters, so we were a priority for them. And he knows what they needed from us ahead of time, so we didn't have to keep digging through our old paperwork. He's incredibly ethical. He knows the system. He knows where they take advantage. And he keeps a small shop, and he does all the work himself, so he keeps all the costs down. Anyway, that's why I highly recommend Matt. He's licensed in Michigan, Ohio, and Florida. You can give him a call at 734-531-9950. Visit his new office in Ann Arbor on State Street, or go to homesurelending.com/mgoblog, and he'll take care of you. That's Homesure Lending, and MLS number 1161358.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai,
But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
Hi, this is Seth. And you know what I forgot to do again? I forgot to deliver the Lantana hummus to the guys while they podcasted. This was on me because Morris last Friday managed to procure some roasted garlic hummus. This is the kind with white beans and topped with garlic and red pepper and herbs, which is not carried by my local Johnny Pomodoro's, which is a travesty, by the way. And I'm sorry, but my wife loves garlic, and I would rather do the read myself on a janky team chat microphone than drive back to Ann Arbor and give away my hummus. If your local grocer doesn't carry the roasted garlic kind, you can still find it at any Bush's, Kroger, or Meijer's, and tell them to stop selling the stuff with kittens. Now here are a bunch of Tennessee fans singing Rocky Top on kazoos.
Jamie, this just happened. You know what happened, Jamie?
What just happened?
Butch Jones got fired.
And?
Did he?
Yeah. And?
And
guess. What would we be excited about?
What would we be excited about?
Yes.
Like really, really, really excited about this.
I know what I'm not excited about, and that's Indiana basketball, but.
Fair.
Brady Hoke is the interim coach, Jamie.
Oh my gosh, are you kidding me?
That was the reaction I hoped and dreamed for. Oh, that was great.
Just in time for the Vanderbilt rivalry.
They're playing LSU.
We're getting Cajun Hoke versus Real Hoke. It's happening.
It's happening.
Oh no. That is awesome. That is awesome.
Oh, man. Every Michigan fan is going to watch that game.
Oh, my God.
It's going to be a huge rating. People are going to be like, what is going on?
Why is everybody watching the worst football game ever played?
Right.
Oh, man.
Wow. Well, Brady Hoke inherits a situation where Tennessee right now has a losing streak against every other SEC team.
Well, I can't say they don't deserve it.
No, I can't say that either.
I mean, if you're Butch Jones and you're like, oh, I'm going to bring Mike DeBoard out of retirement, you get everything that you deserve. And
yeah. Well, I mean, you know, getting back to IU sports, same thing with IU football. They hired Mike DeBoard. They get everything they deserve.
Well, and that's a win over Illinois.
Hey.
Yes, exactly. That's what you – everybody gets a win over Illinois.
Indiana 24, Illinois 14. We're just going to segue right in. Illinois is Illinois.
Yes.
And Indiana isn't, so they get to win a game.
Right. That is Illinois' 10th straight Big Ten loss, and that's currently the longest conference losing streak amongst the Power Five leagues.
Kansas?
To shoot for Brady Hoke in Tennessee. Something to shoot for down in Volunteerland.
Didn't Kansas beat somebody this year?
Did they?
Did they beat Texas?
Last year. They beat Texas last year. All right. You're right. I was just curious. Oregon State's going to be up there pretty soon.
Yeah, they will be.
Do
we have anything to say other than Indiana is not Illinois?
No, not really. Indiana had 90 plays. Indiana ran 90 plays yesterday at 4.7 yards per pop, so pretty boring.
Yeah, but you know DeBoard was just like, yeah.
Yeah.
Moving on to the most inexplicable result of the week, Minnesota 54. Nebraska 21, Dembry Croft runs for 18.3 yards an attempt on 10 carries.
Yeah. They scored double-digit points in every quarter.
They had 500 yards in this game at 8.4 yards a pop.
Yeah.
How does that even...
They came into the game 119th nationally at yards per play with 4.8 yards per play, and they almost doubled it in one game.
I mean, this is
insane.
They're getting
back... Yeah. Well, I mean, on one hand, you know, you could say the first half, you know, when they scored on all four of their possessions, that's sort of what PJ Fleck eventually wants, you know, out of this offense. They got, you know, a half dozen running plays of more than 10 yards out of Smith and McCrary. They had chunk passing plays to Tyler Johnson. And Demaryius Crossman took off on a 73-yard touchdown run in which he wasn't touched. You know, they were blowing him out. They were blowing him out by halftime. Per PFF, of Crossman, 183 yards rushing, only 27 came after contact. So Nebraska wasn't touching this guy.
My God.
Yeah.
Yeah, they scored 54 points, and they completed 9 passes.
Oh.
So Mike Riley is gone.
As good as gone.
Yeah.
I mean, he's been gone since they canned their athletic director for hiring Mike Riley.
Yes, you know, that tends to be a bad sign.
I don't even – they should just pull the trigger now because they need to start, like, talking to Scott Frost.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Tennessee just got to jump on
him. Probably before somebody takes him.
Yeah, they need to start
– I mean
– they need to get in there.
They should have done it 3 weeks ago, honestly.
True.
Right.
But, like, giving up 54 points to the same offense we saw last week is got to be the last straw, right?
Yeah. They didn't even have a mesh point last week.
Does Nebraska have a really embarrassing assistant coach that can be their interim? I don't think so. I don't think they do.
I'm going to look.
No. You're going to look?
I'm looking right now.
Yeah. They would be better off naming Phil Pelini their interim head coach.
God,
Phil Pelini, not Bo. You know, the Twitter account.
Oh, they do have Bob Diaco on staff.
Oh, yes.
So.
Oh, okay, now we're talking.
So, you know.
Connecticut, slightly something wrong with you, Brady Hoke.
Yeah.
Bob Diaco,
we got some amazing interim coach options.
Who just gave up 54 to Minnesota.
Yeah. No, that's definitely the guy you got to elevate.
He's the guy who's tried to make the civil conflict a thing.
Yes, yes. No, that is one and the same, Bob Diaco.
All right.
That's got to be the choice, right?
Yeah, that's got to be
for
it.
For pure entertainment. I mean.
Good looking that up, man. Good
if you're going to name an interim coach, you got to just go with the one that everybody else is going to find the most enjoyable, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Second most boggling game of the week, Wisconsin 38, Iowa 14. Not so much the score, but the fact that Iowa only scores on pick sixes from Josh Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
And they have 66 yards of total offense a week after almost putting up 500 on Ohio State. What is going on, man?
Yeah, that was good. Well, I mean, it was the ultimate regression to the mean, wasn't it? I mean, we've talked all fall about how Iowa had zero offense. I still think last week's game was more of the exception that we don't know how to explain as opposed to this one. We've seen them only score 10 points against Michigan State, only 10 points against Northwestern, you know, for example. And getting back to those Jackson pick sixes, so his second one came early in the third quarter and made it 17-14 Wisconsin. At that point of the game, Iowa had 14 points and only 14 total yards.
Even Mike DeBoer's like, that sucks.
Yeah.
Nathan Stanley's line from this one is ugly.
Yeah.
It's 8 for 24 for 41 yards and a pick.
Yeah.
Good God.
Well, and when you not only did you have a pick, he also had his second Tommy Rees fumble of the year.
Oh no.
Where he tried to pump fake and he just lost it. Yeah. When you toss in sacks and the turnovers, they only gained 4 total yards on Stanley's dropbacks yesterday.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, they only had one play that reached 10 yards the whole game.
Yeah.
And it was depressing. And it was exactly 10 yards.
Yeah.
They only had
one drive that went more than 13 yards. They were terrible.
Relevant for our game is Alex Hornibrook throws 3 picks in this game. And as Alex has been talking about, he has a really bad pick rate in Big Ten play.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah.
The worst.
Worse than Tanner Lee.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a lot of picks.
Well, yeah. I mean, they've committed 16 turnovers just in Big Ten play alone, but somehow they're still +1 in the turnover margin. That's because of their, you know, their defense that, you know, for the third or fourth year in a row is just one of the best at creating havoc plays. But the turnovers have created a lot of weird situations for Wisconsin. You know, they only ran 6 plays in the first quarter against Maryland, and 2 of them were turnovers. And that let the Terps lead that game 3-0 into the second quarter before Wisconsin turned it on. Hornibrook threw a terrible pick in the end zone against Indiana, and that conspired to give Indiana a 10-0 lead well into the second quarter of that game. You know, they had a couple turnovers in the first quarter against Northwestern. same thing. Northwestern's leading at halftime, you know, despite the stats going against them. I mean, so this has been going on all year, you know, where the turnovers, mostly because of Hornibrook's throws, have sort of conspired to put the Badgers in small holes against really bad teams. And then eventually they turn it on and blow them out, so you don't really notice it, you know.
Yeah, he's got an interception in every single Big Ten game this year.
I mean, that's something crazy. That if it happens against Michigan, I can't say that it will happen against Michigan. Like, that's part of the recipe for Michigan to come out of this game with a win is, like, get a couple turnovers from Hornibrook.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Well, what they have to do is find a way to convert whatever turnovers they can get into points. So
Iowa laid out a nice blueprint.
Yeah. They did. Hey, David Long almost took one of the house yesterday. So, but otherwise, though, they've had 16 turnovers in Big Ten play. Three of them have been pick sixes, two yesterday and one against Nebraska. The other 13 turnovers that they've allowed in Big Ten play, they've only allowed 16 total points off those turnovers. One of those was a touchdown drive by Indiana that was, you know, an 11-play, 80-yard touchdown drive. Other than that drive, they're only allowing 1.9 yards per play in possessions after turnovers. So, I mean, you know, this is kind of situational football sort of at its finest, but the defense is used to Hornibrook giving up turnovers, and they're used to going out and just punching the offense in the mouth and not just giving up points, but not even just giving up yards. So that's sort of the 1-2 punch of the Wisconsin turnovers is that, you know, they're really not giving up a ton of points after them. Remember that Purdue game going back a month ago? Purdue started four drives in Wisconsin territory after turnovers on a blocked punt. They only got 6 total points out of it.
All right. Well,
you know, and that was really the only game that they almost lost in Big Ten play. Remember, that was 17-12.
So Wisconsin has Jazz Peavy out. They lose Quinton Cephas for the year. You know, Quintez Cephas. Thank you.
It's my job.
It's your job. And so this is looking like, you know, Hornibrook's not going to throw very much because he's got a lot of picks. Michigan's not going to throw very much. This is going to be like a man ball 1950s rock fight game.
Yeah, Jonathan Taylor versus whoever is lining up at the backfield for Michigan.
Yeah.
I mean, last year's game was 14-7, 21 total points. I mean, you know, I'd be surprised if it really exceeded that.
Should have been 23-7, though. We had a little bit of a college kickers moment,
you know,
we're having one now.
I
kind of expect something similar. Michigan should be able to run the ball a bit. Wisconsin should be able to run the ball a bit, but if either team crests 20, I'll be surprised.
Yeah, me too.
All right, moving on to the least satisfying and simultaneously most satisfying game of the weekend. Ohio State 48, Michigan State 3.
I was surprised this didn't crack your top two most surprising, except, you know, we kind of saw this coming.
I mean,
maybe?
This is always who Michigan State is. Like, they got lucky against Michigan. They got lucky against Penn State with some terrible weather.
And it wasn't pouring against Ohio State.
I mean, they beat Iowa by 7. They lost Northwestern in overtime. Like, they are always a team that was basically a 6-6 team that got lucky. And hey, guess what a 6-6 team does against Ohio State that's not Iowa? So JT Barrett gets back on the wagon, I guess. He just threw 2 picks in this game. But, I mean, the story of this is that the Michigan State run defense gets absolutely shredded by Weber and Dobbins. You know, Brian Lewerke throws 2 picks and has under 4 yards an attempt. And I'm just like, where was that guy against Michigan? Like, he's throwing against a man press coverage. And there's a 1 high safety, and he's not even getting anywhere near these dudes. Like,
yeah.
I mean, he got pressured a little bit, but he got pressured against Michigan.
He took 6 sacks.
Yeah, I mean, their offensive line just couldn't hold up. LJ Scott had a cool Twitter burn where I was like, he's getting arrested in the backfield almost as much as he gets arrested in his car.
Hey-o.
Got a lot of favorites.
Yeah.
Got a couple of Spartans who are not happy with that. I was like, welcome to the block list, gentlemen.
LJ Scott's stat line, he only ended up with 30 yards on 8 carries. He had a 20-yard run on Michigan State's second snap of the game.
Yeah, and a missed run fit. And that was the only thing they could get. If, like, they managed to get Ohio State misaligned, and it happened once.
A time.
I mean, this is like 35-0 early in the second quarter, right? So it was a blowout from the start.
I did enjoy. I was like, that window of games was not necessarily super competitive, and no. I was like trying to find something to watch and like just for swung back around to this just to see if there was anything of interest.
I did the same thing.
And Michigan State inserts Messiah DeWeaver down in the red zone, and he just eats three huge sacks. Yeah. It's like, oh, the future looks not super bright.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, blowout early. The Bucks scored on 5 of their first 6 drives. Touchdowns, and they averaged 55.5 yards on that drive. Meanwhile, Michigan State at that point only had 46 total yards of offense, so there was nothing really good to report for Michigan State.
Penn State 35, Rutgers 6. This was 6-7 at halftime. And the story again.
It was 6-0. It was 6-0 for most of the first half. Yeah.
Rutgers was winning. We need to make sure that gets pointed out.
Saquon Barkley, 14 rushes, 35 yards. What is going on? Like, there are these stats on Twitter where like he hasn't gotten like positive yards in like 3 of his last 4 games. And guess who the exception is? It's us.
Because of one play.
Because of one play, and also because we beat the crap out of them last year, and then they have a couple of tomato cans on bye before, so they debut all this new stuff against Michigan. They're not prepped to see it, and Michigan gets got by it, and then it turns out that once that's scouted, it's like, well, back to the salt mines.
Yeah, right. Did they not think other teams saw that?
I don't know.
Remember the Iowa game way back in December? He exploded. I think that was week 4. He's averaging just 3.1 yards per rush since then. The last 3 games, it's down to 2.8 yards per rush. He's not running the football. I mean, you know, he's contributing in other ways. At times he's been a very explosive receiver and obviously special teams player for him, but they really have not run the football with him for well over a month. And it's sort of the same thing. You know, they're still kind of rebuilding that offensive line. Remember, you know, when they pulled all those defensive players over the offensive depth chart, they still have one guy from then still on their starting 5. They really haven't gotten close to rebuilding that. I know Franklin's up the recruiting a little bit, but he hasn't really nabbed any major O-line recruits, at least none that have seen the field yet. That's just the problem. Yeah, he's, you know, it's at some levels, you know what this reminds me of? It kind of reminds me a little bit of the Lions with Barry Sanders. Remember, he was always getting caught in the backfield a lot because he just didn't have the best blockers. And I think that's sort of Barkley's problem.
Oh, absolutely. I don't think the problem is Saquon Barkley.
No, totally. Not at all. Yeah.
That dude's still the best running back in the country.
I mean, Penn State has 300 yards against Rutgers, and they still like win the game 35-6 because Rutgers can't do anything on offense. But if you're Penn State, you're like,
real,
where did
it was
our...
an uneven it was an uneven performance from Penn State. I mean, they had 11 drives, they scored 5 touchdowns, and they had 6 three and outs. Well, I'm sorry, 5 three and outs, and then 1 first down and out. So just a real uneven performance, especially against a team like Rutgers. They only averaged 27.6 yards per drive. That's below the national average. And by comparison, they had 42.4 yards per drive against Michigan.
I mean, it's just boggling that, given what we saw when Michigan played Rutgers, that Saquon Barkley gets 2.5 yards a carry.
Yeah. The element of surprise is important, and it's also very difficult to scheme around a terrible offensive line for an entire season.
Yeah, I mean, I guess. Also, football is weird.
That, too.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of football being weird, Northwestern 23, Purdue 13.
I knew that'd be the segue.
Elijah Sindelar throws 60 passes, gets 6.3 yards an attempt, so that's not super
good.
Great.
Not great.
Yeah.
Speaking of, this is the most Justin Jackson stat line ever.
Yeah, it sure is.
25 rushes for 46 yards.
I know.
Clayton Thorson pulls their ass out of the fire, sort of.
Yeah. The thing that frustrated me the most about Justin Jackson in this Purdue game was the game was on ESPN2, and they kept doing a Justin Jackson watch because he's climbing the Big Ten all-time leading rushers charts. The next guy he's going to pass is Mike Hart. So the whole game, they kept flashing Justin Jackson's picture next to Mike Hart, trying to catch up. And it was so, first of all, I was so frustrated because it's like, oh, really? This guy is going to catch Mike Hart and pass him and be ahead of him? And then it became comical because they kept showing his stat line, and they're like, oh, with that carry, he's getting closer. And he never got closer. he kept having a 2-yard run, and then he kept getting a 2-yard loss. They kept showing the same yardage graphic but they were really kind of like hyping this chase, and I was just getting frustrated.
It's hard to sell Purdue Northwestern to the masses.
Mike Hart always get caught from behind by Northwestern players, though.
That's true.
And
that's true.
I think he needs
43 yards to still pass Mike Hart, and I think if he hustles with the ball game, I think he can do it.
Yeah, he's got at least 50 more carries in him, right? He can get
right, 40 yards of those
carries.
But on a positive note, since we're bagging as usual on Jackson, on a positive note for Northwestern, this clinches their third straight winning record in conference play. The last time they had three straight winning records in conference play was 1929 to 1931, when this whole group was still called the Western Conference.
This might be the strongest argument yet for divisional realignment in the Big Ten.
Yeah.
I'm just surprised this game didn't go to overtime.
That too.
I was like 23-13.
I was trying to figure that out. I was trying to figure how it was going to get to overtime. It was 23-13 halfway through the fourth quarter, and I was like, "Well, Purdue touchdown field goal, we're in overtime again." But they never, they couldn't do it. Purdue's offense, you know, it's weird. They've been rotating Sindelar and Blau all year. Blau's out with an injury, and you just kind of see maybe how rotating quarterbacks kind of kept teams off guard, but also that trio of running backs that have been doing really well for the Boilers the last month or so. Knox, Worship, and Jones, 36 yards on 14 carries. That's their worst output of the season outside of the Wisconsin and Michigan games.
See, I was trying to figure out, okay, so like Northwestern got a field goal on the first drive of overtime, and then they pick six Purdue to end the game, but they wouldn't have kicked the extra points.
Yeah.
They couldn't have done that.
Yeah.
No, they wouldn't have, yeah.
So I was like, I was confused. So was everybody. Not winning overtime. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's Northwestern is definitely a football team that exists.
Yeah.
That's my opinion.
You know, they just sort of do things. I like to say they do things without excitement, but they had all those overtime games. But there's just never really anything.
I mean, they were like boring, exciting overtime games.
Yeah.
Whereas like.
Oh, that Iowa game was 10-10 going into overtime.
Yeah, and like so was the Michigan State game was like. 17.
That's right. That one, yeah, everybody scored touchdowns all of a sudden once it got into overtime.
Right, yeah.
That was about the same.
It was 17-10, and, like, Michigan State had, like, no points.
Yeah.
And then it was like, oh, now we have points until we don't.
Yeah.
There we go.
So, yeah, Northwestern ends with Minnesota and Illinois. They could very well go 9-3 and 7-2. And don't forget, in week two, they got absolutely hammered by Duke. non-competitive in week two against Duke.
I think that's come up every week on this podcast.
I don't think they're that much better than that week. Like this isn't one of those teams you're like, wow, they've come a long way since the Duke game. No, they really haven't. They're the same.
Yes. They're just playing bad teams.
Yeah. Yeah.
Purdue is like the highest rated win on Michigan's schedule, by the way, on S&P.
Yeah.
Not ideal. By a lot. Not ideal.
They're like 40th or something.
We could have used a win out of them yesterday to finally have a win against a 500 team.
Big Ten, man.
Yeah, I
can't even muster the full Big Ten.
Yeah.
Well, like last year, like I mean, we're playing Colorado, and it's like, oh, Colorado's gonna win their division in the Pac-12.
Yeah.
And this year we play Florida, and Florida is like worse than Air Force.
Mm-hmm.
And Air Force is real bad, and Cincinnati is real bad, and Florida's like, no, we can do this. We can. Have a higher S&P ranking.
During your noon channel surfing, did you see the Florida South Carolina play where Florida intercepted South Carolina in the end zone and they returned it 30 yards only to fumble it back away to South Carolina?
I mean, it was on my Twitter feed about 60 times.
Oh, that's true.
And I watched it every time.
You click play on every one of those.
Like, oh, just one more. I'll do that.
Fine, if I must. You know.
I mean, I don't even like take pleasure in Florida sucking anymore.
No.
I mean, they're fine. They're okay.
Yeah.
They can win some games now. I'd rather have them win than, like, Tennessee or Georgia.
Well, good news about Tennessee, Brian.
Tennessee just became really watchable.
My God, they did. Oh, my God, I'm going to watch Tennessee.
We came not that far away from a DeBoard hoax singularity in Tennessee.
Oh, my God.
Like, that almost happened.
Mm-hmm. Is Indiana going to make a bowl game? Well, Tennessee's not going to make a bowl game. We need, like, a special, like, Indiana-Tennessee bowl game.
I'm still...
Now, that would be the most watched bowl game of the postseason.
I'd watch. Yeah.
Every
I'm
Michigan
still disappointed
fan.
That last year. I'm still disappointed that last year we didn't get and didn't get the Ducks playing Rich Rod in Arizona somehow. Not even in the regular season, because that would have been Hoke versus Rich Rod on some level.
Oh my God, that would have been so amazing too.
Yeah,
because Oregon's defense was like 120th last year.
I know. It would have been crazy. Speaking of Rich Rod, I know bowl projections don't mean much, but the last couple of weeks I keep seeing Arizona and Michigan popping up in Holiday Bowl projections.
I mean, they'll do that if they can.
Yeah.
I mean, Rich Rod doesn't want to see that. I don't want to see that.
No.
That is
the Holiday Bowl is actually kind of high up on the Big Ten pecking order for bowls, isn't it? I mean, I'm confused these days with what the real pecking order is with the playoffs and the New Year's Six bowls kind of having a major impact in that. But the Holiday Bowl is not typically like 6-6. You know, Big Ten team, the 2 years that, well, that's not true. Indiana was in the Holiday Bowl last year. Never mind. Scratch all that.
Were they?
Yeah, they were. They lost to Utah.
That's, oof. I have no idea.
In another one of those almost won games by the Hoosiers. I think we're at 57 now over the last 3 years. I don't know.
I think that just kind of goes without saying. Like, at least Indiana's interesting. They don't get blown out. They're not.
Find new and creative way to.
Right,
their fans in the gut.
I mean, not interesting for like Indiana fans, but like they're worth watching. Unlike Rutgers and
their games are usually competitive.
I think they're sort of worth watching based on because of what we're talking about here with Hoke and Tennessee. Like we know the board is the offensive coordinator, you know. So I think Michigan fans kind of tune in to watch Indiana play these close games and watch them be undone by their offensive play calling and offensive philosophy. So I think it works for a lot of Michigan fans.
Yeah, I just remember those like two consecutive quarterback draws against Michigan State. And I was just like,
yeah.
And then like the Indiana people I follow on Twitter are like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I remember that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. Good talking to you, Jamie. We will talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to the MGO podcast. I am Ace Ambender along with Brian Cook. It has come to my attention from SB Nation's Jason Kirk that Pete Feinbaum went to Tennessee. Everything is right in this world right now.
Better than us?
Nobody!
Brady Hoke is the interim coach, Jamie.
Oh my gosh, are you kidding?